Good afternoon and welcome to On The Radar here on Eagle FM. I'm your host Ndafa Happy Juju. It's Thursday, just one step away from the weekend, but still firmly grounded in the week's demands. Now the headlines are evolving, the pressure points are shifting, and across the country, ordinary Namibians continue to navigate the realities behind the rhetoric. Now this program is where we pause to unpack the noise, where we take the time to not just report the news, but to understand it. Who's setting the agenda? Who's being affected? And what does it all mean for the people on the ground? From small-scale farmers in Zambezi to civil servants in Windhoek, from students in Ketmanshop to vendors in Ochuarongo. Here on the Radar, we go beyond the surface. We dive into infrastructure, policy, economics, and social justice with a commitment to context, accuracy, and relevance. Our mission is simple, to connect the dots, challenge the status quo, and bring your voice into the national conversation. You can follow this broadcast live via Eagle FM app and website, or stay connected with us through Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and our WhatsApp channel. Now, whether you're tuning in from your office, your car, or your home, we are right here for you. This is On The Radar, where Namibia's headlines meet Namibia's people. Let's get started. Up for analysis today, as part of the 6th National Development Plan, also known as NDP-6, the government of Namibia has outlined ambitious infrastructure goals aimed at transforming the country's economic landscape by 2030. Now, central to this vision is the development of a world-class economic infrastructure network that meets the needs of both households and industry, with a strong emphasis on energy infrastructure as key pillar of national growth. Now, the energy targets under NDP-6 are bold. Namibia aims to increase installed electricity generation capacity from the current 734 megawatts to 1,153 megawatts by 2030. Now, this will be achieved through a sustainable mix of locally generated energy, focusing on dispatchable utility-scale generation and expanding bulk generation, transmission, and distribution infrastructure, as revealed in NDP-6. In parallel, the country plans to invest in energy storage systems, explore nuclear power development, and drive national energy infrastructure upgrades. Now, the plan also prioritizes affordability and access, with a goal of raising electricity access from 59.3% to 70% across the country through a combination of sectoral investment mobilization, national electrification programs, and policy reforms. NDP-6 seeks to ensure that Namibians, especially in underserved communities, benefit from reliable, affordable power to fuel economic social development. In 2022, the government of Namibia, supported by the World Bank, undertook a geospatial least cost electrification plan, also known as GLCEP study, to map out how the country could realistically achieve universal electricity access. Now, this analysis revealed that to achieve all households by 2030, approximately 432,000 existing projected households would require electrification. The study determined that about 80% of these connections should be through grid expansion and the remaining 20% via off-grid solutions such as mini-grids and standalone solar systems. However, the study estimated this effort would cost around 13.4 billion Namibian dollars and identified significant hurdles, including funding shortfalls, limited human resources, and constraints in off-grid service provider capacities. As a result, in early 2025, Namibia formally extended its target, and the goal of universal household electrification would now be achieved by 2040 rather than 2030. Now, the geospatial least cost electrification plan, when it was used, conducted in 2022 for Namibia, provided the analytical basis for shifting the universal access to 2040. The purpose of it was to identify the least cost technology mix, grid expansion versus off-grid, to serve underserved households, and use the method of combining geospatial data, also GIC, with energy demand modeling via tools like Global Electrification Platform to access factors such as existing infrastructure, population settlements, and retrain. Now, Namibia used the geospatial least cost electrification plan in 2022 with its support from the World Bank. And with what it has revealed, as I mentioned earlier now, obviously shows that NTP6 might be a little bit unrealistic in terms of setting the goal to 2030. Now, the GLCEPs are commonly utilized by governments and organizations such as the World Bank to establish national electrification strategies. And these plans integrate GIC-based model tools, including the Global Electrification Platform, to optimize technology pathways appropriate for each unelectrified settlement. Outputs typically include estimated investment requirements, capacity projects, the share of populations best served by grid, mini-grid, or standalone systems, and partial maps to guide implementation decisions. Now, to further discuss this better and to hear from somebody who understands it even the more and deals with it on a daily basis, we're going to talk to Vinus Stefanis, who is an electrician, but right after the commercial break.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Ipurane ngeno wapubwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutete okoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Ono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka. Okone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onore tatimwe bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali. Ileko, derewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. I'm now joined in studio by Vinus Stefanis, who is an electrician. Good afternoon, Vinus, and welcome to On The Radar Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon, happy and... Good afternoon to Eagle FM listenership out there.
Now, Vino, NTP6 targets in terms of energy are quite bold, hey, with the aim of increasing installed electricity generation capacity from the current 734 megawatts to 1,153 megawatts by 2030. And not only that, to make electricity affordable and have access to about 70% across the country. What do you say about this?
Yeah, I must say the NDP6 goals or plan. It's a plan. It's a good one for a country such as Namibia. But I should be frank. Also, I think we are a bit probably over ambitious in terms of looking at now the resources. I'm talking about the investment that have to be made so that we can make sure that we reach such an amount of generation.
Yeah.
So, because currently, if you look at our supplier authorities, first, let's start with the energy generation first.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, Namibia imports around about 70% of our electricity, which is, in most cases, I think 70% of that probably around about, let's say, 50, if not so, it's a coal fired. So it's just recently when we now started moving into setting up solar power plants, the solar power plants actually, so that we can sort of boost our local generation. But then again, as much as we want to electrify such numbers, we should also consider now the cost that it's involved. That's it's probably one of the hindering factors for towards Namibia energy sufficiency.
Yeah.
So we as a country currently, I think for the past how many years, maybe since independence, we've been spending over around about a billion in electricity imports. We get from ZESCO, which is a Zambian company. We get from Zimbabwe. The name of the company also just slipped my mind. And definitely from then, Eskom, which is definitely South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So we have those three key countries that supply us with energy. It's Zimbabwe, it's Zambia, and then it's South Africa, actually.
Yeah.
So that's why probably our import electricity bill, it's standing currently at around about a billion per annum.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, but all hope is not lost, actually, on that target, because I have seen now NamPower has been, is our NamPower is one of our big power generation company.
Mm-hmm.
Has been making bold move actually with the recently opened or commissioned they call it the name it Kai Khan Hub or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's in a different vernacular actually. So which is it's a hybrid one whereby it anticipates already the toted green hydrogen, and also, but currently it's also being run at heavy fuels. You know, they use heavy fuels actually to produce power. And then just, I think, 3 weeks ago, if not 4 weeks ago, they have commissioned a 100 megawatt plant, a solar plant. They just did the groundbreaking ceremony, and the construction for that, it's expected to be completed, I think, within the next 24 months, actually, so that it will be probably in 2 years' time, so that they can also support or feed back into our grid. And then the target is that it should be able to provide us with at least 100 megawatts. So we are talking about now doubling the current generation, actually using what they call the mixed generation. So currently we have, I think, farm dyers in Erongo region, whereby they intend also to produce, to feed around about, I think, 10 megawatts into the grid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also one of the good ones. But again, if you put all those numbers together, it still doesn't really end up to 1,153 megawatts.
Mm.
So we still have a shortfall. So we probably hope that there will be some sort of acceleration in terms of now investment, so that we can probably get those power generation up and running before the 5 years left.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now in 2022, the government of Namibia, supported by the World Bank, undertook a geospatial. Let me actually get that right. Geospatial least cost electrification plan study. And this plan, and the result of this was revealed in early 2025 when Namibia formally extended its target, whereby the goal of universal household electrification would now be achieved by 2040 rather than 2030. And in one of the estimated cost there is about 13.4 billion Namibian dollars. Now, of course, the document was released. Our president, we appreciate how she launched it not so long ago. But do you think this is something that was overlooked, considering that they had used the GLCEP study and having brought forth results, and they were so clear to say that it can now be achieved by 2040, and now it's been pushed down to 2030. However, we try, could we perhaps still be able to reach those goals by 2030?
To reach those goals by 2030, I must say that we are punching way above our weight, and it's a very, very good thing. obviously to be ambitious, but it's also another thing to make sure that you at least do not probably sort of overpromise and then underdeliver. So there must be that sort of measurement so that we make sure that we don't fill people with much optimism and then at the end of the day, the population or the population will be left disappointed.
Yeah.
But yet again, I see there comes also a bit of contradiction when it comes to government policy and stuff like that. Because one, if you cross-reference between what we call a Namibia Green Industrialization Blueprint, it also speaks about the same thing, but in a different time frame or target time frame, you know. The NDP say it should be achieved in 5 years' time. The Green Industrial Blueprint, Namibia Green Industrial Blueprint, I think put some 2040 and 2050. So as the document that you just cited now, it also put it at 2040. So I think we also need some sort of policy harmonization so that we make sure that what it's on the left, it's also on the right, and on the right, and then we have some sort of correlation, because now the NDP, which is a national document that was just simply launched, speaks about 2030. A green industrial blueprint is also a government document, and it speaks about 2040 and 2050.
Mm.
Yes, in different capacities, in different sectors, actually. But it's also, and again, it was also about the issue of energy again. How do they want to make sure that they boost up local generation in terms of the wind power, actually, and also solar, and now the green hydrogen, and also coals and all of these things. So, there seems to be a lack of harmonization when it comes to those things. But then again, to be honest, as somebody that is very enthusiastic about energy and the investment, also looking at the investment that is needed, definitely to make sure that we reach such a capacity. It's a way too far-fetched, probably, if I must say that. And I must be very honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because currently, let me just give you the local figure before we go even there. We have, I think, four supply authorities. So supply authority, these are your seat of Windhoek, your Erongo-Red, seat of Windhoek, Erongo-Red, Seno-Red, No-Red, and they call it, local council or something like that. Regional and local councils, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been, all of them, as we are speaking right now, they have proposed a tariff hike. So meaning they want to charge the consumer more.
Mm-hmm.
But the government has been subsidizing those supply authorities, I think to the tunes of around about, If I get my figure well, it's around about already, somewhere around about 500 million already. You know, so meaning as much as the cost of generation is going up, which is definitely influenced by the cost of import of electricity.
Yeah.
So that's another problem again. So if the government is already heavily subsidizing our local supply authorities, so where will we get the money to make sure that we also now boost up the capacity generation? Looking at also our figures, whereby we have, I think currently our national debt is standing at 130 billion and all of these things. Where will we get that amount of money to make sure we reach some of those our goals? I honestly doubt. But then again, as I said, it's very good to also to dream big and also to be very ambitious. And then, they said you must always aim for the stars, and then if you fail, then at least land on the moon. Maybe we will surely land on the moon. I just hope.
It also said that 80% connections will be through grid expansion and the remaining 20% via off-grid solutions. Now, I want us to talk about this remaining 20% via off-grid solutions. And of course, you are an electrician, but I know you know something about solar energy. So are we perhaps overlooking solar energy? I mean, I use solar energy at my house. Of course, the light is not as bright as the electricity bulb itself, but it's bright and it really helps me. So are we perhaps overlooking solar energy?
No, we are definitely not looking solar energy. I mean, in fact, from the technical point of view, it's a fact that Namibia, it's one of the countries that receives much sunlight on the face of the earth. Let me put it that plainly, right? Namibia is one of the countries in the whole world. Namibia is actually one of the countries that receives much solar energy or sunlight compared to any other country.
Actually. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So in terms of solar energy generation, we are actually one of the best country, actually. But the problem is only that the cost, actually, the money to invest into those solar power plants. That's what I'm saying. Just recently, NamPower had launched a 100 megawatt solar plant at the site of Karat region. You know, so we actually not overlooking that, because actually that's something that we could have made. We could have invested long ago.
Yeah.
Otherwise, by now, just for interest sake, if you could have invested in solar energy, probably let's say 10 years ago, we could have cut the 70% import even to somewhere in the region of probably 50, if not 55. Just to be frank.
Yeah.
And you said about the bulb that it's not light. I think it has to do with also the capacity that you have, probably. So solar energy works perfectly as any other power generation, be it from your coals, be it from your fuel, be it from any other thing. So it works perfectly. It doesn't have any problem, actually. And it's one of actually our natural resources that we can use. We can maximize to our best potential so that we make sure that we make electricity cheaper. And also, we electrify Namibia as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Vino, I appreciate all that you've told us today. But, of course, what recommendations would you see, should you be given an opportunity right now at the forefront of the president and those that are making decisions right there in the boardroom? What recommendations would you say that we put in place, or they put in place, in order actually to meet those goals, perhaps even not really by 2030, but at least by 2040?
You know, actually, I think one hindering factor, let's just be honest here, one hindering factor that has been hindering us for quite long, it's just the resources, actually, and that's the investment, the money, actually, just to set up solar plants. But obviously, as the saying goes, the sun will never send you an invoice. I think to me that's much better. Yes, the sun will never send you an invoice.
Yeah,
that is something that we must also look at in terms of if you really want to be a country that is energy sufficient.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the technical human capital that is required also in solar. We already have institutions that are training our solar electricians and solar technical people, and we have NAFT offering even to the level of master and PhD and IUM and then your UNAM.
Yeah.
So obviously, in terms of expertise, I don't think if we lack that much. As compared to other energy generation that has been also making waves, things like nuclear energy, obviously. But you need this heavy, heavy technical expertise, obviously, because to us, that it's sort of a foreign concept, because we are not really there yet. But obviously, with the right investment, as I'm saying, we might also make sure that we get, if we can get luck on that area. But if I was to advise government, I'm saying invest in your solar energy, actually, because you have the human capital. The human capital is roaming around the street. NAFT is training, UNAM is training. Obviously, by the time, probably if you have to make a bold investment today, in 10 years' time, which will be 2035, we'll be able to reap the fruits of our investment, actually. Instead of prolonging the dreams to 2040 and 2050 with probably nuclear power and all these other energy sources.
Okay. Finance, Stefanos, thank you so much for always making time for us to educate us on electricity and energy-related matters. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, bye.
And there you had it from Vino Stefanis. For now, we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Stay tuned. We still have more news analysis coming your way.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give...
You save a slash prices on groceries such as 4 kilos real good frozen mixed chicken portions, just 189.99 Namibian dollars. 84 grams of Robertson's chicken spice, just 13.99 Namibian dollars. Knorr soup of all variants, just 5.99 each. 700 milliliter Wellington's tomato sauce, just 25.99 Namibian dollars. 2 liters of Right Brand sunflower oil, just 68.99 Namibian dollars. And 2 kilo bag Pasta King elbow pasta, just 44.99 Namibian dollars. Save big at You Save.
Warm up with red hot deals at WB. Get 750 gram CNV mayo for only $37.99 with SmartBuy. 2 times 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken for $139.99 with SmartBuy. 5 kg Palana elbows or mac for just $122.99. And 2.2 kg Surf hand wash powder for only $49.99. See all our July month-end specials at www.vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On The Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, of course, we move forward with other news to analyze. Now, this morning, the minister, or perhaps early morning, afternoonish, the Minister of Information and Communication Technology, Emma Theophilus, has called on the Namibia Film Commission's board to develop clear policies that formalize and govern the creative industry. Now, she emphasized the importance of ensuring young creatives benefit meaningfully from the National Youth Fund. Speaking during a quarterly meeting with the board on Wednesday, Theophilus also urged the commission to move towards full autonomy backed by sustainable business model. Now, of course, we're going to engage Monica Amkoto, who is the founder of The Notebook and a firm believer in Namibia trying to make itself known in terms of creative industry. Good afternoon, Monica. A pleasure to have you on the Radar Analysis.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Now, I know this is one of your topics that you really do appreciate whenever we're talking about a creative industry for Namibia. Just exactly what is the creative industry for those who are probably wondering? That's a new word to me. Go into it, Monica.
All right. So the creative industry basically refers to the sector where individuals individuals in the creative that have to do with the creativity, with their creativity, as well as skills and talent. And this industry has a potential to basically create jobs, drive innovation, and contribute to the economy. So when we talk about the creative industries, anything that has to do with literally using your talent, basically, or your creativity,
Yeah.
The long and short of it, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, with the minister calling on the Namibian Film Commission's board to develop clear policies that formalize and govern the creative industry, how do you take this directive or perhaps this counsel or advice by the Minister of Information and Communication Technology?
It's quite encouraging to see the Honorable Minister recognizing the potential of the creative industry. I mean, for many, many years that the industry has been underlooked. And even from where we're coming from, even from our homes, if you tell your parents you're going to study art, they give you the side eye. So it's quite an upliftment to hear that even the Honorable Minister is talking about it and, you know, is uplifting us in such a way that we implement policies, provide growth, as well as implement support, especially when it comes to the funding side of things, as well as coming up with infrastructure,
Yeah,
it's quite encouraging for us in the creative sector, in the creative industry, to hear that the minister is actually putting a foot forward, and these are some of the discussions that have been long overdue, and we are quite excited to unfold what the minister has spoken about this morning.
Mm-hmm. Now, she also emphasized the importance of ensuring young creatives benefit meaningfully from the National Youth Fund. Imagine somebody sitting at home with a very good talent, which I like a point that you mentioned earlier, could even contribute meaningfully to the economy, yet they are sitting with their talent at home and not even be able to benefit from the National Youth Fund. What do you see?
I think it's really motivating. Because if you look at many people that supposedly are in the creative industry, this is a conversation that we've had in the corners.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had with each other, we've had with our friends, our families, but it never comes up really when it comes to getting youth funds or anything that has to do with funding when it comes to the creative industry.
Mm.
We've never actually really spoken about it. And it's encouraging for somebody who's sitting at home and they have their business module or their business plan and they're like, I want to really like turn my talent into a business idea one day. It's a motivation and it's a step forward. And even though we kind of not understanding that it's a long shot, for us to actually bring the creative industry to a standard way, let's say South Africa's creative industry, it's a long way to go. And this just shows us that we can do it. It's a start. We got to start somewhere. It's quite motivating.
I hear you. Now, of course, there's a common saying, Monica, that says, if you teach a frog to fly, it will spend the whole of its life thinking it's stupid or something like that.
Yeah.
Do you think, of course, in reference with giving example, comparing Namibia's creative industry to that of South Africa, in South Africa is way ahead of us. You know, I don't know. We are not even halfway there. And this, and I think when we talk about youth being involved now, and I do appreciate how the Ministry of Education, Arts, Sports and Culture is now trying to really just integrate youth into their plans, in sports and stuff like that. This is something that really could help boost the country. And not only that, actually keep the youth off the streets. And at the end of the day, we don't have to deal with the social problems that come with it. But even as you're sitting right now, should we be talking about funding for the youth? Do you perhaps know any doors that you can actually knock on and say, hey, I have this bright idea in mind. If you can just take a listen and perhaps fund it. Is there anything that's coming to your mind?
Well, to be honest, it's quite difficult, especially for us in the creative industry. As I said, there hasn't really been a structure that has been in place or put in place for us to actually go directly and look for funding. I mean, if you look at some of the initiatives that these young people are running, it's quite difficult to just reach out for funds. So it would really be nice to just have a door where you can knock and say, okay, guys, this is my idea, and this is what I plan to do. So is there available funding for me? I think it would really be nice to really knock on doors where we are really, really directly accepted, rather than just, you know, when you have an initiative, you reach out to stakeholders to come as on board as partners and all that and all that. That's quite a long process. And most of the times you're really, really not successful with it. This is quite a close topic to my heart because just recently we had an initiative. It's a drama initiative. Basically, that it's going to help or it's helping people with the acting talent. We want to create a footprint in our acting industry, create more films, create more content for us to actually watch, because there's nothing out there for us to watch, honestly speaking. I think if we really do have a door where we can knock and say, guys, I have this idea, please fund it, it would really, really, really be encouraging. Because to be honest, we struggled and we're still struggling to call out or to reach out to potential sponsors to sponsor the initiative. It's a hard thing to do. It's quite frustrating, but yeah. So if there was really a door where we could knock and say, guys, this is my initiative, this is what I plan to do, is there some available funds for me that I could do? Because we're all trying to empower the youth, create jobs, and I guarantee you that the creative industry, if really planned strategically, it could be a multi-million dollar industry in Namibia, because there are a lot of young, talented people out there in Namibia that are doing amazing things. I think specifically talking about the content creators, the gaming people, the actors, the musicians, the visual artists, I think we deserve to give one another a push. And it's been a topic that has been obviously that we don't even talk about, and it's a good thing.
You know what? I'm just thinking right now in my mind that I sure hope that the ministers, the deputy ministers, those sitting at the table, CEOs at particular companies actually do take the time to implement the things that the Namibian people, whether the youth, the women, the men themselves on ground actually say right here on Eagle FM platforms. Because you get a lot of wonderful feedback from the people and actually a really good counsel and good advice to help them navigate and hear what the people actually themselves desire. So in other words, that was a very good point that you made, Monica. Thank you so much for making time for us.
All right, okay.
Now, of course, you can also be part of the conversation right here on the reader. You just never know. Your idea might just be implemented right after airing it right here on air and the right people are listening to you. So 083-288-401 is the number in studio that you get you right on air and hear from, and people can actually hear your contribution or opinion. Now, do remember that Eagle FM is everywhere and it can be heard by so many people. We have a wide range of audience, always on, and it's always accessible. Now, whether you're commuting, working, or relaxing at home, simply plug in your earphones and stay informed with minimal inconvenience. Now, our platforms deliver real-time news and analysis straight to your mobile app, keeping you in the know wherever you are. Now, in partnership with our sister e-paper, The Villager, we do provide concise expert summaries of Namibia's latest business, economic and policy developments, which is delivered digitally every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. It's your essential brief to start the week informed and stay ahead. Now, I do want to also emphasize, when you talk about The Villager e-paper, it's not a gossip column. It's a social economic news to educate you, the Namibian people, and to inform you on the know-how of what's happening within your country and around the borders of Namibia. Now, whether you're looking to grow your business reach, also our complimentary apps, including the EBA and Eagle FM app, do offer targeted opportunities for companies to increase visibility of their products and services across a wide spectrum of consumers, whether it's from urban professionals to rural communities. That you can also call up on our studio number, not necessarily our studio number, but our office number. You can call them up and you can get your company the visibility that it needs. Did you know that you can also advertise with Eagle FM Facebook? Well, reach out to us. Now, let's also not forget our social media platforms are among the most active in the country, giving brands, startups and individuals the perfect space to amplify their visibility and connect with engaged audiences in real time. So Eagle FM is your voice, your story and your business are always in on the radar. For that, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Simon, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now we take you to what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators. We're starting off with the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. Now, one US dollar today will get you 18 Namibian dollars and 13 cents, while one euro today will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 75 cents. £1 sterling will get you 24 Namibian dollars, while one Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 69 cents. Now, one Chinese yuan will get you 2 Namibian dollars and 53 cents, while one Naira will get you 0.012 Namibian dollars, one Botswana pula will get you 1.33 Namibian dollars, or 1 Namibian dollar and 33 cents. And now for what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators or trading economics. Now, crude oil today. Actually, let's start off with coal. Thermal coal futures out of the Newcastle port rose to $115 per ton in late July, the highest in 6 months as China aim to combat oversupply in multiple industries. Now, Beijing noted it will shutter mines that produce coal above their quotas in their latest efforts to curb the oversupply of power feedstock. Now, this was after reports indicated the Chinese government mandated plans to increase coal stockpiles by 10%, aiming to take advantage of lower prices and preventing more aggressive pressures in the producer deflationary momentum. Still, coal output in China rose by 3.6% from the previous year in June, aligned with earlier signal that it plans to boost output by 1.5% to 4.82 billion tons this year after the record amount of output in 2024. Now, on the demand front, Chinese fossil fuel power output dropped by 4.7% annually in the first quarter amid lower power demand and strong supply from renewable energy sources. Still added, infrastructure spending put a floor on power demand. The British pound fell to 1.323 US dollars on Thursday, its weakest level since May 12, as concerns about the UK's economic output and expected rate cuts weighed on sentiments. Investors are increasingly pessimistic about the British economy, especially in contrast to the US, where data has been stronger. Now, recent figures, including solid second quarter GDP growth and job gains, have boosted confidence in the US economy. Meanwhile, markets are pricing in two more interest rate cuts from the Bank of England this year, compared to a much lower likelihood of cuts from the Federal Reserve. Now, sterling is down at 3.7% in July, its worst monthly performance since September 2022, as fiscal concerns and slowing growth continue to cloud the outlook for the pound. Kenya's annual inflation accelerated to 4.1% in July 2025, the highest in 3 months, from 3.8% previously. Now, upward pressure came mostly from prices of food and non-alcoholic beverages, transport and housing and utilities. On a monthly basis, consumer prices rose by 0.1% in July, the smallest increase in nearly a year after a 0.5% advance in the prior month. The unemployment rate in Macau held steady at 1.1% in the three-month period ending in June 2025, unchanged from the prior period and remaining at its highest level since May 2024. The number of unemployed individuals edged up slightly by 200 to 7,300, while total employment deepened by 100 to 372,700. Most job seekers were previously employed in the retail trade, construction, and gaming sectors. Now, the labor force remained stable at 380,000. By gender, labor force participation remained higher among men at 70.5% than women at 63.3%, with both figures unchanged from the previous period. Consumer prices in Sri Lanka's capital, Colombo, decreased by 0.3% year-on-year in July 2025, easing from a 0.6% drop in the previous month. Now, this marks the 11th consecutive month of deflation through the softest decline in 10 months as prices moderated for food and non-alcoholic beverages at 1.5% versus 4.3% in July. Industry producer prices in Italy rose by 2.5% year-on-year in June 2025, up from a 1.8% increase in May. Now, price growth accelerated in the domestic market, reaching 3.9% compared to 2.7% in the previous month. In contrast, prices in the foreign market remained unchanged at 0.3%. Within the foreign market, prices rose more in the euro area at 0.8% versus 0.5% in May. Now, retail sales in Portugal increased 6.9% year-on-year in June 2025 compared to an upwardly revised 5.3% rise in May. Sales went up faster for non-food at 7.6% versus 4.4%, including fuels at 3% versus minus 0.2%, while household goods at 7.5% versus 1.1%. And now that's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Now, remember, you can also partake in the news bulletin by analyzing it alongside with us. Share your opinions and contributions or perhaps ask questions. Our studio number is 083-288-401. 083-288-401. Now let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace, but don't go anyway. You're still in my company up until 14:30.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipurane ngelo wapubwa Eva Tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite okoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka okone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe mbali hea li nola natu hea li bali no hea ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features.
Welcome back. Now at this point, we take you to news beyond the borders. We always start off regionally, then we move over to continental news, thereafter international news. Now we're starting off in South Africa. We're talking about the launch of South Africa's inaugural procurement of independent transmission projects.
Electricity Minister Dr. Hosea Ntsorama-Goba and Deputy Finance Minister David Masondo have unveiled the request for qualification phase of South Africa's landmark independent transmission program. This is all unfolding at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange in Sandton. That's where we find SABC News reporter Katleho Lehodi, who joins us now live. And Katleho, help us understand why this is significant.
A very good morning to you once again, Ayanda, and to our viewers at home. This becomes very significant when you look at the country's energy security and the challenges that we've been experiencing over time. We see the Department of Energy and Electricity just working with Eskom as its entity to push and ensure that there's transformation where the country's transmission lines are concerned. Remember that the aim here is to build about 14,000 kilometers of the transmission lines and ensuring as well that there's energy security. And the minister earlier on also just giving us a sense of there are about 1.6 million of South Africans here at home that are without electricity, and we see them saying there is a need now more than ever to modernize the transmission infrastructure, but also government can't do this alone. We see them just more or less publishing and unveiling this request for qualifications in roping in the private sector so they can become players as well in helping to ensure at least that these transmission lines and the infrastructure become a reality. I'm going to bring into the conversation now Minister Hosien Soramokopa. This is a 14 billion rand more or less project. Is it 14 billion rand? The minister will confirm it with us here in terms of the figure. But we see you saying that the ball is rolling.
Do you understand the chance of winning $500 million
will become very important
ShopRite YouSave gift voucher? Then simply tell us, what makes ShopRite YouSave different from all the other stores? Send your answers on WhatsApp to 081-200-4144. That's 081-200-4144. You save. I save. We all save. At You Save.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
This rollout of transmission lines. Welcome to the SABC, Minister. Just give us a sense of this launch here today. And at the back of it, we see you saying that the ball is seemingly rolling where the transmission efforts of the country are concerned.
Oh, yes. Thanks, Katleho, and greetings to the viewers at home. This is the single biggest bill program of a post-apartheid government. 440 billion rand of investment over the next 10 years. A significant part of that is going to come from the private sector. So we created a procurement dispensation that makes it possible for us to invite the private sector to build, operate, and transfer a concession in the line and returning them back to the state and in this instance to the NTCSA. This, as you make the point, is going to enable us to ensure that we aggressively onboard renewable energy generation. So we have additional generation capacity that will be coming outside from Eskom, renewable solar and wind. We've got huge endowments of those resources. It's going to help us over time to curb the cost of electricity, but also to democratize energy access, making sure that your rural hinterland, your peri-urban areas get electricity. As you make the point, 1.6 million households don't have access to electricity. So we are resolving the issue of access, we are resolving the issues of affordability, and most importantly, we are resolving an economic question. So just imagine 440 billion rand of injection. Part of the requirement is that 49% of ownership of whoever gets to win whichever part of the corridor must be South African based. And then we also make requirements with regards to local content, participation of women and youth in that complex, skills development, investment in education, so that at the end of this first phase of the design of this program, we've been able to grow the South African economy, industrialize on the back of the energy complex. So it's not just about the megawatts, it's about the bigger question, resolving an economic question in the country. Energy has been a constraint. Now we're making it a catalyst. The reason why the economy has not grown is because of load shedding. The reason why the economy now is going to take off and grow to levels and proportions that are envisaged in the NDP will be primarily because of electricity. This decarbonization agenda, whilst placing reliance on the base load, our endowments such as coal and also working on nuclear, but we know that the renewables are going to offer an exponential increase of the mix, and that's the direction we're taking.
Meanwhile, ANC in Limpopo is mum on corruption allegations.
Residents of Polokwane on Wednesday woke up to reports that their municipal council had approved the appointment of a Zimbabwean national as director of water and sanitation. The appointment has been widely criticized on various social media platforms. During his post-council media briefing, the executive mayor, John Mbe, confirmed the appointment, adding the incoming director brings a wealth of experience.
We've also appointed a new executive director for water and sanitation, Mr. Kennedy Chihoda. We're also proud to announce that because his appointment is particularly vital for us to address our historical water backlogged and odor challenges affecting residents from Innerdale and Emdo to Madiwa Park.
When asked whether the new director's academic and professional skill set could not be matched by a South African national, Mbe reiterated that the appointment is part of their commitment to resolve sanitation and water provision issues in the city.
We were looking on the fact that we're in the process of getting Polokwane to have its own entity called Polokwane Water. We're looking at the experience of both working at the municipality but also leading an entity of water. How many can you get out of that who are willing to come all the way from big metros to come and work in Polokwane? But also we're looking at qualifications. You can get a technologist, but to get an engineer, a registered engineer, is something else. We also wanted someone with diverse experience in municipalities.
Mbe is the regional chairperson of the ANC's Peter Mokaba region. The ANC has meanwhile also updated the public on the outcome of its recently held PEC meeting. The party reiterated its commitment to ensuring that its deployees in government prioritize service delivery. It says, however, the meeting did not discuss the allegations against Mbe. The party also refused to be drawn to comment on the allegations.
We want to make correct pronouncement. We don't want to be carried away by these sentiments and allegations that are in public. We want to receive a report. Once we receive a report, which indicates what is happening in Polokwane municipality, the ANC will then be able to pronounce itself.
Madaje says the PEC has also resolved to start a process of consulting branches on the possibility of hosting its provincial elective conference earlier than scheduled. The term of office of the current PEC is set to end in June next year. Biman Baloyi, SABC News, Polokwane.
Meanwhile, Uganda sets a security traffic plans for Africa National Championship.
Residents around the Nelson Mandela National Stadium in Nambole and road users on the routes that have been designated for the transportation of CHAN tournament teams should brace themselves for inconveniences when the month-long tournament starts on 4th August in Uganda. The Uganda Traffic Police spokesperson, Michael Kananura, confirms it's not only just the routes that are going to be affected, but also areas around the key venues.
The main routes of the event will be the Kampala Entebbe Expressway, connecting to the Northern Bypass, then to Bwaise Interchange. From Kubiri Roundabout, connecting to Murago Traffic Lights, connecting to Yusufu Lule Road. Chira Road, connecting to Mkoto Road. Karelwe Interchange, connecting to Chisasi Roundabout, connecting to Naria Interchange, then Nambore Interchange.
Kananura adds that plans are already in place to ensure that the disruptions don't take too much of people's time when dignitaries are being shuttled around.
Traffic police will be heavily deployed along the designated routes to ensure safety and smooth movement of the African Nations Championship, CHAN 2025, participants and dignitaries. Lead vehicles will accompany convoys to facilitate secure and uninterrupted transit.
Police spokesperson Kituma Rusoke assured the public that the security committee is already working to ensure the safety of all stakeholders during the African Nations Championships.
We have started the deployments. We deploy according to need. You will be seeing us in progression. The public should expect certain security protocols. You will be screened. As long as you are going to attend a football match.
When it comes to ticketing, the public is informed that there won't be any physical selling of tickets, but everything is to be carried out online. However, the committee clarified that the ticket is for the match day, meaning that on Monday, 4th August, one ticket is enough to watch Niger taking on Guinea and later Uganda Cranes taking on Algeria at the Nelson Mandela National Stadium.
If there are two matches in a day, you do not need to buy two tickets. One ticket is enough to permit you to watch both matches. However, take note, once your ticket has been scanned and you are allowed to enter the stadium to watch the first match of the day, if you exit the stadium's gates, you cannot enter again to watch the second match of the day.
Time now is for the final touches, with a little over 72 hours before the official kickoff in Dar es Salaam, when Tanzania takes on Burkina Faso in the first game of the African Nations Championship. Felix Manyindo, NTV Sport.
Adaptation of AI in newsrooms. Innovation boosts operation in newsrooms.
Business, my name is Kelvin Yakundi. Now, adoption of artificial intelligence is no longer an option. All industries, including those in the information space, have an opportunity to leverage of AI tools to better so that to have better collection, generation, and dissemination of information, as KTN's Nakib Kemboy reports.
The world is changing fast, and artificial intelligence has just quadrupled that speed of change.
AI will bring people along and it'll leave people behind. And the key is you want to be one of the persons that it brings you along, okay? And what I mean by that is that you spend the time to understand these tools, understand the technology, use the tools, the ability to learn, the ability to relearn, the ability to forget, for example, stuff that might not be valuable in the future.
A lot of the fear of AI comes from lack of information. And really, just think of the AI as a very smart tool. Anytime there's a new tool, tools can help people. Think of like a sharp knife. The sharp knife can cut the steak. A sharp knife can also cut someone who doesn't have skill in using the tool. And like you and I were just showing beforehand, we're using AI to be able to process content.
Living in a world where there is an oversupply of information and designing what is right and what is wrong and also what is real and what is not real, those lines are becoming thinner by the day.
Yeah, well, I mean, with AI, trust is everything. Your reputation is everything. People will trust your content based on your trust. So fundamentally, what media organizations need to do on platforms like LinkedIn is be authentic, be trustworthy, be factual, lead with the facts.
A lot of newsroom directors are afraid of AI because they haven't come in and actually used it. They've maybe issued some queries to ChatGPT or used Gemini or Claude Anthropic, but here's the way that a newsroom, the media, needs to be thinking about this. Think of it as an extension of your workforce. The way to overcome the fear is literally just start playing with it. Just start testing it. Just start learning. And if you're stuck on how to use this or you're confused, you can literally ask the AI, hey, I'm stuck here. You know, Noah was saying I should build this. What does this mean? And it'll actually help you through. Say, here's my goal. I want to automate a lot of my newsroom. How do I go about doing this? Help me come up with a plan. And that's the beauty of the AI. It's not thinking. It's not sentient. But it's so good at pattern recognition that it can help you achieve anything that's already been done before.
The role of artificial intelligence cannot be overstated. And in a world where we have an oversupply of information, AI tools will be critical in making our work easier. At the same time, only those who equip themselves with these tools will be able to survive. Now, Kipkimboy, KTN, Shusha, Azerbaijan.
Innovative strategies spur resilience in China's textile hub.
As American tariffs intensify, China's manufacturing powerhouse is coming under pressure. CGTN's Lincoln Humphreys headed to China's textile hub of Guangdong province to look at the strategies powering the resilience of companies over there. More than just surviving, these firms are finding new ways to lead the industry.
To fully understand the far-reaching ripple effects, I need to step inside these factories to get a feel for the real lives behind the headlines. The company I'm visiting, Kirby, was founded in 2008. Their entire business was once built on exports 100%. The initial tranche of US tariffs under the first Trump administration around 2018 chipped that down to 70%. Now they're compelled to look closer to home. This pivot from exports is a common strategy, a market movement born of necessity. But the competition is fierce, especially on price.
Our customers are under pressure too. Prices in the high-end market are coming down, which in turn is pushing down the prices for our own mid to high-end clients. Of course, we aren't going to cut our workers' wages just because our prices are lower. It's a cost we share and absorb with our customers. I truly believe this is just temporary. This will all pass and things will definitely get better.
To truly understand, one must walk in their shoes or indeed make their bags. After pleading with the boss for 2 days, they finally relented and allowed me to join the assembly line. It's time to put down the microphone and pick up the slack, experiencing life on the factory floor. At first, I gave the sewing machine a try.
Yeah, so I'm holding, hold that.
Okay.
Okay. Right, that's it. One done. That's that step. We're gonna go to the other side rest. Ah. Okay, that one wasn't very good.
After ruining one piece, I asked if I could do something easier.
How many should I do in an hour? What's my KPI?
像正常一个小时的话，最起码是300。On fire。对，嗯。所以这个东西它是有个过程的嘛，对吧？它是一步一步的来的。When
my director discreetly checks on.
Canada follows France and the UK with plan to recognize Palestinian state.
Now, Donald Trump says Canada's move to recognize a Palestinian state threatens a U.S.-Canada trade deal. In a post on his social network, Truth Social, the president wrote, "Wow, Canada has just announced that it's backing statehood for Palestine. That will make it very hard for us to make a trade deal with them. Oh, Canada," he writes. Canada is the third Western power to make the announcement in the past week, joining Britain and France, although it's the first of those three to place explicit conditions on both the Palestinian Authority and Hamas. The Prime Minister, Mark Carney, said the dramatic policy shift would happen in September, as long as the Palestinian Authority carried out democratic reforms and held elections without Hamas. Israel has condemned the moves, calling them a reward for terrorism. Here's Canada's Prime Minister making the announcement.
That Hamas must disarm and that Hamas must play no role in the future governance of Palestine. Canada will always steadfastly support Israel's existence as an independent state in the Middle East, living in peace and security. Any path to lasting peace for Israel also requires a viable and stable Palestinian state and one that recognizes Israel's inalienable right to security and peace.
Our North America correspondent, David Willis, sent this update on Mr. Carney's plans.
Well, this move increases the growing international pressure on Israel, which the Canadian government believes has allowed a catastrophic situation, as it puts it, to unfold in Gaza. And that situation has now prompted Canada's Prime Minister, Mark Carney, to declare that Canada will recognize Palestinian statehood at the forthcoming United Nations General Assembly meeting, which is due to take place in September, making Canada the third major economy within a week to make such a declaration. Now, Mr. Carney made clear that the decision was fueled by Israel's actions and the suffering and starvation of people in Gaza, which he said was eroding the prospect of a two-state solution literally before our eyes. Now, Canada's recognition is conditional, however, on the Palestinian Authority instituting democratic reforms and holding elections next year in which Hamas is not a part. Now, France announced last week that it was recognizing Palestinian statehood, and Britain has since threatened to do the same if Israel doesn't negotiate a ceasefire between now and that United Nations General Assembly meeting in September. Well, Israel has condemned the Canadian government's announcement, saying that it was part of a campaign, as it put it, of international pressure. And President Trump isn't in favor either. He said any such recognition of Palestinian statehood, as he put it, played into the hands of Hamas.
Families of Israeli hostages react to the UK move to recognize a Palestinian state.
Hello and welcome to today's Verified Live. Families of Israeli hostages being held by Hamas in Gaza say the plan by the UK and other European countries to recognize a Palestinian state validates terrorism. Sir Keir Starmer announced yesterday that the UK would recognize a Palestinian state in September unless Israel meets certain conditions in Gaza. Well, in a moment, I'll speak to the lawyer Adam Rose, who represented all the British Israeli hostages, and to our political correspondent Harry Farley. But yesterday, the UK government stressed that part of the reason for that move now was to try to change the situation on the ground in Gaza. Well, today, the Hamas-run health ministry says seven more people have died of conditions linked to malnutrition over the last 24 hours. That brings the reported number of hunger-related deaths since the start of the Gaza war to 151 people, 89 of them are children. Aid agents fear that we've reached tipping point where those starvation numbers will accelerate sharply unless the Gaza Strip is flooded with aid. The UN says at least 500 trucks a day are needed. Yesterday, only 115 were actually let in. So let's start this hour speaking to the lawyer Adam Rose, who, as I say, represented all the British Israeli hostages. And Adam, welcome here to our program. Your reaction and the family's reaction to what the UK government announced yesterday.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for having me on. I think the families are just distressed to see a statement which puts the condition for recognition of the state of Palestine, on which they express no opinion whatsoever themselves, entirely on Israel's shoulders. Israel has to agree a ceasefire, it says, or else, unless it does so, the UK will recognize the state of Palestine. The situation of the hostages themselves is not made out as a condition in the same way, and that is what offends them.
The hostage families in Israel have said the UK move validates terrorism. Do you and the British families share that view? Do you think it actually perhaps incentivizes Hamas not to actually take part in any sort of ceasefire, to stall on that?
Well, it is somewhat bizarre and somewhat perverse the way the document works. The document says in one paragraph, Hamas must release the hostages. And then it says the UK will recognize the state of Israel unless Israel, and it doesn't say unless Hamas also, reaches a ceasefire. So you have this somewhat perverse situation where Hamas is incentivized to hold on to the hostages, because the longer it says it's going to hold on to the hostages, the less likely it is that Israel can agree a ceasefire. Politically, militarily, it cannot agree a ceasefire if the very condition on which it's engaging in activity against Hamas is that Hamas is holding these hostages. And Hamas is being effectively encouraged and to hold on to the hostages. I'm not saying for a moment that that is the British government's intention, but it is the impact of the statement made, which has the appearance of being rushed out without fully thinking through what's going on.
So, in a sense, you think that's an inadvertent consequence of what they've actually announced and the wording of how they've announced it. I saw that Emily Damari, the British-Israeli hostage who was released back in January, describes Keir Starmer's move as, quote, a moral failure. Have you, in the intervening time, had a chance to talk to her? Do you share that view in terms of a moral failure here?
I've spoken to her mother this morning, yes, and it's it has the words, when you look at the words, are extremely unhelpful words on the page from the statement from the government. The statement goes against very clear positioning by the current Prime Minister and the previous Prime Minister and Foreign Secretary Lammy and his predecessor, Foreign Secretary Cameron, that the release of the hostages was required immediately and unconditionally. In other words, it's the very first thing that must happen is the release of the hostages. And this statement does not position things in that way. We wrote to Downing Street late yesterday evening asking for clarification and confirmation that what we were seeing on the paper did not reflect the position of the government, and we have not received.
Flights resume after UK air traffic control issue, but disruption continues.
There has been major disruption at airports across the UK this evening after all departing flights were paused because of a technical issue at air traffic control. All airports from London Heathrow to Gatwick to Manchester and Edinburgh have been affected. This happened at around 3 o'clock this afternoon. The National Air Traffic Control Service, NATS, says the issue has now been fixed, but the delays are continuing. Passengers due to travel are being told to check with their airline. Well, Boris Redfern is one of those passengers waiting at Heathrow for his flight to take off.
Well, we were scheduled to fly at 3:35. I've been on the plane for nearly 2.5 hours. And we've just heard over the Tannoy system that it's going to be at least another 90 minutes before we get in the air. Oh, so I was due to land in Pisa at 6:30, and I'll be arriving at 10 p.m. We didn't really have any words for the first 60 minutes or so, and then there was another, you know, hour-long gap. So we've had two or three kind of updates as to what's going on. Nobody seems to have any idea what has actually happened from the air traffic control perspective. We've just gotten that it's a technical glitch. Initially, it was that had knocked out the whole of the southeast of the UK. But then I've had other people say it's across the whole country.
Well, Sammy Gabriel from Newbury in Berkshire sent us this video from Barcelona Airport. He says his flight to the UK did a U-turn around 30 minutes in the air and returned to Barcelona. Have a listen.
We've just landed back at Barcelona Airport. All the UK flights, UK bound flights, of course, haven't came to return due to the air traffic issues. Pilots informed us that the plane's just been refueled, and shortly when we get our opportunity, we'll be taking off again and heading back to the UK. So, all in all, it's going to be a few hours' break.
Let's cross live now to our transport correspondent, Simon Browning, who is at Heathrow Airport. And Simon, bring us up to date with the very latest on the disruption.
Yeah, it's been a difficult day for the aviation and airline industry this afternoon.
that temporary outage at the National Air Traffic Control Centre. It was only for 20 minutes, but it causes major disruption. Now, the National Air Traffic Control Centre effectively manages the motorways of the sky. It manages where our flights go around the UK from airports arriving into the UK when we get on our planes and head outside of the United Kingdom on our holidays and to other destinations right around the world. But when those systems goes down, it's a real compromise on safety because effectively those managing the skies can't actually see properly. And when technical problems happen, they need to make sure safety is paramount and planes needed to be grounded for the safety of all of us using the skies. And that's exactly what happened. A tech outage led to a temporary grounding of flights only for 20 minutes. Now, the systems came back online within 20 minutes, but the impact is substantial. The aviation sector and airlines operate on such tiny margins. Planes land, they take off. Planes land, they take off. Any disruption or delays causes a serious knock-on. And when the whole system goes down, the knock-on is substantial and serious. And that's exactly what we're seeing now. Now, 20 minutes.
And now we have come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Voters Education Program brought to you by Bishop Lucas Katenda. From Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful Thursday. Get some rest and make sure that you spend wisely. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipuranengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi todaya njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi tayo loka okone ushendife nawa nukumuna oijamoili nawa ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ineko berewa
nora heta tu natu our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impa? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica.